Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
And we'd like to welcome everybody back to the Football's Family Podcast. And we have a friend of the program on today wearing a hat that I did not know he had. And he'll have to explain it to you because obviously you can't see it on Facebook or Facebook. This is Zoom right here. We're on Zoom, but you can't hear, see it over the podcast. There we go. It'll come out. Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch Podcast.
See, and Darren has been on less than 100 times, but by not much less than that. You've been on probably 99, 98 times. And Darren and I have gone back and forth but due to our fandom of the different teams. So we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight, just a little bit, maybe some free agent moves that our teams have made. Pittsburgh's been busy.
Oh, yeah. We're psyched up in Western Pennsylvania.
Yeah. But we also, since he, if I remember correctly, Darren, you used to be a referee umpire for a referee for high school football.
Yep. I was at the high school level. I was a line judge for a bunch of years, and I was a referee. I was a crew chief for the last 15 years. I was official.
Okay. So you know a little bit about the rules.
They're a little bit different than the NFL, but I can figure my way around the stripes a little bit, you know.
Because what I want to do with this in particular, we'll talk a little bit about free agency. We'll talk a little bit about the rules. Your hat, he's got a hat that looks like it's straight out of college, but it's actually a hat for the Pigskin Dispatch that was made out of a football. The P was on it. I just was looking at that, and I'm just in awe of it. Now I got to figure out if I could get Football's Family on one of those. That'd probably be very expensive. So, Darren, let me just ask you. First off, your Steelers have made some major moves at quarterback. I mean, first off, just go ahead and explain, you know, because obviously you got your ear to the ground there.
Yeah. So if you look back at like the beginning of March, the Steelers had three quarterbacks, the ones they ended the season with. They had, you know, Kenny Pickett, who's in his second, just finished his second year. Mason Rudolph, who's been there for years as a backup. He was there when Roethlisberger was there. And Mitch Trubisky, who the former Bears and Bills quarterback. And they didn't really have a great offensive season the last 2 years. I fired a coordinator beginning of the year or middle of the year last year. Still really didn't have a lot of success. Mason Rudolph, who is now a Titan, had some success at the end of the season, took them into the playoffs, and they lost to the Bills. But they were in the game against the Bills. They just didn't have the offense. They had turnovers, and the Bills beat them by a couple touchdowns. So about 2 weeks after that, they got rid of all three of those guys by cutting, let them go in free agency or trade, and ended up with Russell Wilson, nine-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl winner. Should have won two Super Bowls, and a guy that's got all the potential in the world in Justin Fields, formerly the Bears. So their quarterback room totally turned around, and the biggest addition is probably Arthur Smith, who I think you know down in your neck of the woods of runs a pretty good offense with a sort of mediocre quarterback play and strong running game, and that's sort of what the Steelers are going for, I think, here.
We can see and Arthur Smith, just say what you want about his coaching there in Atlanta. He still had the second best mustache in the NFL behind Mike Vrabel. His offense that he ran in Tennessee when he left, we did dip. Now, if I remember correctly, the next year was the year the Titans were first place overall and got beat by Cincinnati in the divisional round, which was awful. But the Titans' offense suffered from that point on, and Arthur Smith is a good coordinator. Is he a good coach? I imagine he'll get another shot. If Josh McDaniels get another shot, Arthur Smith's going to get another shot. But what I like about what you have there, and I'm not familiar with your offense. Your defense is insane. If you got TJ Watt, you're great. I mean, it's awesome. But I don't even think Russell Wilson will finish the year as the starter. I just don't think he will. And you know, the Steelers did not make a big risk by signing him.
No, they got him for the league minimum. And because Denver is under contract to pay him $39 million or whatever a next team doesn't pay him. And Russell Wilson sort of wanted to stick it to the Broncos, I think. So he took the league minimum, which is like $1.2 million. And so Denver's paying $38 million for Russell Wilson to be the quarterback for the Steelers this year.
No,
thank you, Denver.
Yeah, there you go. Dead cap. Dead cap basically means a guy is not on the team and they're still paying him or his salary is still there. And I believe most of that would be – a lot of that would be the signing bonus that they would prorate over the years. But even then, $39 million, $38 million this year, and if I remember correctly, it was like an $85 million. So it was like, what, 47 the next year? Good gracious.
Yeah, they owe a lot of money to Russell Wilson, that's for sure.
Good thing Walmart owns the Broncos. So if your milk goes up a couple hundred dollars a gallon, it's because of that deal right there. It's because
Yeah, the cost of Cheetos is going way up.
Just keep coming out with the cheddar and sour cream, Bake Lays, and Waverly Walmart. Keep it coming, and I will help pay for that salary. I will. Just keep it coming. Now, Mason Rudolph was an interesting pickup for the Titans. I didn't see that coming. There's a couple that I really – Calvin Ridley signing was not one that I thought. The Mason Rudolph, I get it because we need a backup that is pretty decent. Most people know about Mason Rudolph from Myles Garrett beating the fire out of him with a helmet, which I still think should have gone down as an assault with a deadly weapon. You don't do that. Mm. It's kind of like in hockey. If you take your skate off and try to slash somebody, that's the same thing. You can kill a guy that way.
Right.
But Mason Rudolph turned out to be a pretty decent quarterback, and there was even talk at the beginning of the preseason or the beginning of the offseason that he could buy for a starter. But if you have Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, that's not going to happen. The Calvin Ridley thing, Darren, got me because a couple of years ago we had – well, about 3 years ago we had A.J. Brown that would have been younger, and the price tag would have been about $5 million more. That's it.
Hmm.
And there's a reason why John Robertson isn't the GM anymore. There would have been some cap crunching. It would have been bad. And this year we had a major league. Tony Pollard was a good pickup. I enjoyed that one. A couple of guys on the defense. This year we had about $75 to $80 million in cap space. So good gracious, you can go crazy on that.
Yeah, looking at the AFC North, all right. The Cleveland Browns, their quarterback room, and I forget, they just got some other veteran. Joe Flacco is no longer a Brown, but they still have Deshaun Watson. They still have the young guy that played really well last year and got hurt. I forget, he has three initials. I forget what his name is right offhand, but he played really well. They just picked up somebody else. Their quarterback room is costing them about $70 million this year, where the Steelers – with two guys that started last year on other teams and has a Super Bowl in that room, is costing them about $4 million. So, you know.
All right. Look at the Cleveland Browns. According to clevelandbrowns.com, so I guess this is a pretty decent source right here. It's on my phone. Right. You can't see that, but there it is. Deshaun Watson, which is around, what, $100,000 million a year. Jameis Winston, a former –
Jameis Winston, that's the one.
First pick, and I'm sure he is a league minimum, probably. Tyler Huntley, which I think is a pretty decent pickup, and Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and I believe you were right. He played well, but I guess he got hurt, and Flacco was picked up.
Right, right.
Now, to me, why in the world would you not sign Flacco again?
I have no idea.
I don't know. Now, could he have been a one-shot wonder? I don't know, but is he better off than having Deshaun Watson in there?
He united the team. I mean, it's you know what? Flacco and Mason Rudolph were sort of similar paths. They both came in the end of the season to teams that had strong defenses and were looking for an arm to solidify the offense, and the teams rallied behind them, and they won games. Flacco had a little bit more success than Rudolph, but gosh, they both played really well. and neither one of them are on their teams that they played really well for last year. Kind of interesting.
I don't like how and you want to know how good Flacco was last year? Who won Comeback Player of the Year?
Yeah.
And he only played, what, about 7 or 8 games?
If that. Might have been like 5 games.
That guy went nuts.
Mm-hmm.
He went nuts. Now, did he have a good defense? He probably had the top – at one of the top five defenses last year. Myles Garrett deserved his awards, and he overall, that was a great defense. But Flacco turned back the clock to the time that he won the Super Bowl. He was flinging it everywhere.
But you know what, the statement you said about Myles Garrett, I think he played, he had a good season, but I think TJ Watt had a better season. If you look at there's a comparison out there. There's a bunch of them where they take the top 12 statistics of guys playing in their position as edge rushers. And TJ Watt had 11 of the 12 over Myles Garrett this year. He had more tackles for loss, more sacks, more solo tackles, interceptions, fumbles, a pick six. He was more productive than Myles Garrett.
How did he win that award then? Because I'm with you. I thought TJ had a, you know, if you say, well, Myles Garrett deserved it, of course he did, but I think TJ had a better season. Is it just the position?
I'm not sure. I think by the players looking at it, because they had sort of that pre-vote before the official vote for Defensive Player of the Year, TJ Watt won like the two or three that they had. And that was the player selecting. When it came down to the official NFL Defensive Player of the Year, Myles Garrett had it. And they're saying because of his importance to that defense and teams had to react to you know, keep him off their quarterback and backs more than they did for TJ Watt, which I don't know. I think they're both important players and it changes your offensive scheme. You know, you're either going to run at him or you're going to double team him and try to keep them away, and it's almost impossible to keep them away from the quarterback. Those guys are like magnets to the quarterback. I mean, they're both solid players, but I just think TJ Watt got snubbed, and it just similar to what he did 3 years ago with Aaron Donald winning it, who had a great season, but he had more, he was more productive than Aaron Donald when Aaron Donald got it. And Aaron Donald even admitted that just a couple weeks ago when he retired. He said,
Go ahead.
Aaron Donald himself said that he felt that TJ Watt should have won it in 2019 or whenever that was. When
do you think it's the TJ, to me, of course, I might be wrong. You see him a lot more than I do. Seems to be more of a, he's not the attention seeker type of guy.
No, he really isn't. But he like turns into another gear. He reminds me of sort of those steel curtain linebackers back in the 70s, a Lambert, you know, a Ham. When the team really needs them to do something, especially crunch time, the end of a game, all of a sudden this, you know, TJ Watt comes up with a big play, a sack, a strip sack, a fumble recovery, a pick, you know, just when you think all the chips are down, this guy turns the games around. I've seen him do it, you know, at least a dozen times in his career. He did it 3 times this past year at crucial points in games to give them victories, to give them their 10 wins.
You and we're going to go into another question here in a second, but the one thing I remember so much about the Steelers that still takes me off to this day, Darren, Titans had a good season. Kerry Collins was their quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Good season. And we were on the goal line. We were in Nashville on the goal line. And out of nowhere, Troy Polamalu jumps over the offensive line and sacks the quarterback and stopped the drive. And that's something when you talk about a team change, one player changing a defense to change the game.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I think of. And of course, obviously, Troy was not a linebacker. He was a defensive back, but he was a bullet. He was a bullet.
He was a long-haired Superman over the line. I don't know how he timed that.
But you remember that play. You remember that play, don't you? If he had gone a second later, he would have caught like the left tack or the left guard right in his crotch would have hit his face.
Mm-hmm.
But he went right over the guy's head. And if it was a second earlier, it would have been offsides. Or actually, it'd been encroachment. It'd have been encroachment, you know, or one of the two.
I have that as my third favorite Steelers play of all time, you know, immaculate reception, you know, it's up there. James Harrison's pick six at the end of the first half of that Super Bowl against the Cardinals. And, you know, then Troy Polamalu is right there. I mean, those are some great plays.
Did James Harrison have to have a whole bunch of oxygen after that? Did they have to just cart him off with oxygen? Because
thank God it was halftime. I think he was gassed. Yeah.
All right. Well, the main reason I have is because of your background. These new rule changes, there are only two that are big that I want to talk about. I don't really keep up with a lot of the league changes until I start seeing it on Twitter and you talk about it some, and Facebook. I didn't understand the kickoff until I think it was in the, was it the UFL or the XFL? One of the, it was XFL, I believe, that they showed how the kickoff is going to be. But this hip drop tackle, what in the world is that, Darren?
It's one of those things where it's hard to explain, but it's easier when you see it. And the hip drop tackle is basically a body weight tackle, is what another name for it. It's where the defender is taking, he's kicking his own legs out from under him. So his full weight is when he's grasping the opponent, usually down around the waist or something. You think about that. The most famous play, the one that really spurned us, was Mark Andrews getting hurt, or the Ravens. Yeah. I mean, very broke his leg. I think there was two or three other incidents where somebody had some severe lower leg injuries from this. And it's been a common technique for probably, God, probably the last decade or so, where these guys are, you know, grabbing around the legs, they're kicking their own legs out, so their full body weight is, you know, it's like hitting a brick wall for these guys running the ball, you know, whether receiver, tight end, or running back. And it's usually from behind. It's almost as stout as like a horse collar tackle. You know, where you're grabbing somebody and they get hurt, but it's because they're dropping their weight. Now, that's really what they're talking about with that. And I don't think you're going to see a lot of flags on this. I think it's going to be more of those things where we're going to be reading about it, like the Friday after the game, and the NFL fined so and so, you know, $100,000 for a hip drop tackle.
Now, I think that's what I heard, like on the commentaries after that. They're saying it won't be flagged, or every now and then you'll get a flag because it's a spur of the moment thing and people can't see it, but the NFL will see it. The NFL will see it.
Yep.
And you will hear, you know, first offense, second offense, third offense. Would this be something that would cause suspension, do you think?
I think if somebody keeps doing it, they're making it a point of emphasis. I mean, they're changing a rule to bring it in. And I mean, look at the other things that they're fining players for. I mean, every week, I think it's every single team is getting two or three different fines, or maybe it's just the Steelers. I know they're every week there's at least two guys getting fined for something. And you don't even, some of them, I didn't even notice during the game, and they're like showing, I'm like, God, I don't remember that happening. It was, you know, nothing. But, you know, they're taking this pretty serious. So I think there will be some stringent fines and maybe some suspensions if people keep on doing it.
Well, what I like, you know, this right here would have been fine, say, in 19 or in 2000. Okay. Mm-hmm. 2000, Georgia Dome, Kevin Dyson, Mike Jones. 1 yard short. That is a hip drop tackle.
Yeah,
it is the I'm looking at the Music City Miracle right over here, which was a perfect lateral. It was in a forward lateral to the Bills fans. Fight me on that. but Kevin Dyson's one that received it. He just basically crossed over and got a pass bullet from McNair. And if that play happened this coming season on the biggest stage, it would have been untimed down. The game wouldn't have been over, and it would have been a chance for the Titans to tie it. This is where I have a big problem with it, because this would have also benefited me for the past 5 or 6 years with Derrick Henry. You can't take that guy down from the top. He will bury you. He will bury you. Jerome Bettis would bury you. Derrick Henry, Eddie George in his highlight, in his Jamal Lewis, those guys would bury you. The only way that you could take them down, because of how big they are, is from the hips, and you would take their legs out. What I'm reading now is the NFLPA, the Players Association, they don't like this rule.
I think it's because the defenders are complaining about it, because that's been a successful method of taking down bigger guys like Andrews, you know, Derrick Henry, like you say, some of the other guys around the league. And but it's, they're not saying that hitting in the waist or hitting at the knees is a bad thing. It's when you drop, when that player sort of drops their hip, drops their weight to take them down. If you hit somebody head on, you know, just like you were taught when you were playing ball, you know, head up, hit your target and drive, wrap up and drive, you know, that's a legal play. It's when you wrap up and then kick your own weight out. So you're, so now that runner has your weight that they're taking, an instantaneous, you know, weight drop. That's what those hip drop tackles are. I think that's what you're gunning for to eliminate from the game.
I get that. But boy, these are spur of the moment things. And there are some NFL players have to have some sort of intelligence to play the game. They just do. Mm-hmm. I know that not everyone is going to be an A student. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about men who know the game, learn the rules, can read a playbook. That's intelligence. That's incredible intelligence. I've looked at some of the playbooks and I'm like, you know what? I'm glad y'all can do that. I'm glad that y'all can do that. Where somebody like Russell Wilson or, you know, even Will Levis or whomever can go from read one to read two, read three to read four to run in 2 or 3 seconds. That's insane. Yeah. But if you are in the middle of a game and you know this, you've seen the high schoolers, they get worked up and they try to tackle to save it. And they do this that they've learned all their lives. I don't care how smart you are. You get worked up, you're going to go back to your basic instincts. It's just going to happen. So, yeah, this is going to be where the NFL funds a lot of their charities and even their, I remember correctly, something like their retirement package for the players. Right. This is how they're going to fund it. Yeah. The second one, and I don't understand this, and maybe you can help me out with this, is the kickoff rule.
The kickoff rule, I'm kind of intrigued by this because I think it's going to make it really interesting. Anytime that you can make a play be more like a regular football play, a scrimmage play. And that's really what they're doing. And this, like you said, this came from the XFL from last season, who's now the UFL. But they sat this year and really tweaked it, I think, to improve what the XFL was doing. So basically what you're going to do is you're going to have the kicker is going to be the only player on the kicking team on his side of the 50. He's still kicking off from the 35. The rest of the 10 players are down, I believe, at the 40-yard line. Maybe it's the 30-yard line. I got to verify that here. Hold on a second. They're at the 35-yard line. I'm sorry. They got to be between the 30 and the 35-yard line. And the receiving team has to either have 9 players within that their 5-yard zone, which is 5 yards away from the kicking team, so they can have either 1 or 2 players back deep to receive the ball. Can't have any more than that. Now, the landing zone is what you're going to hear a term quite a bit. That is between, it's basically the red zone, between the 20-yard line and the goal line is your landing zone. So the kickers, the objective of the kicker is they have to make it pat the ball in the air past the 20-yard line, because if it doesn't go past the 20-yard line, it's just like it is out of bounds. It's a 25-yard penalty from the previous kicking spot, which would normally be the 40-yard line. So, you know, any offense is going to want to set up on the 40-yard line. That's a great field position. If it goes out of bounds, it's the same as being short. You're just like it always has been, 40-yard line, 25 yards in advance. If the ball flies into the end zone in the air, it is going out to the 30-yard line unless one of the returners takes it out. So that's a pretty big, you know, penalty there. If the ball lands in the landing zone and skips into the end zone and they don't return it out, it goes to the 20-yard line. So
that's a lot of rules.
Yeah. But what's interesting, you can already see where people are going. Nobody's really playing their hand, but it's projected. Everybody's going to be trying to kick sort of the coffin corner to land inside the 10, outside the hash marks on one side or the other. So try to skip it in the end zone so it doesn't get returned. So it rolls in the end zone, comes out to the 20-yard line with no return. but they're trying to bring the kick return back into the game, which I think is a fantastic play. And it's going to be kind of cool because these guys are only 5 yards apart and there's not the train wreck collisions when they're running down, you know, 20 yards from each other and smacking heads.
You and I both remember Devin Hester. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the human joystick, the guy from Kansas City, cannot remember his name off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
And Devin Hester, by the way, deserves the Hall of Fame. So instead of William, he played. He was actually a wide receiver and a defensive back, but he found his key, and he was the best receiver or the returner of his generation, period. But I would love to see that because there's nothing to me that changes a game more than a punt return or a kickoff return.
Right. But okay, you go back to talking about the Steelers. Did you see within a half hour after this rule was approved who they signed? They signed Cordarrelle Patterson within a half hour after that rule became official, who I think, if I'm not mistaken, he may have more touchdowns on kick returns than Devin Hester.
Oh, good night. Cordarrelle Patterson is one of those guys that he's like a Swiss Army knife.
Right.
And I believe, if I remember correctly, he was a UT Knoxville guy. He played wide receiver, was a kickoff returner, and then played running back for the Raven or for the Falcons for a couple of years. And now they got him
under Arthur Smith.
Under Arthur Smith. And when I heard that, I thought, how does a guy who he's 33 years old, so he'd have been 31, 30. How does a guy transition from being a speedster, which he is insanely fast, to, oh my goodness. I'm going to show you these numbers according to the internet is never wrong. How do you change from being a returner and a receiver to a running back? Listen to this. All right. So he's played for, what do we got? A number of years.
Dozen years, I'd guess.
Yeah. 2,795 receiving yards, which is not a lot.
No.
Which is not a lot. But 2,500 rushing yards in 2 years, 2.5 years. That's a lot. The return yards, 7,998 yards. Golly!
Crazy. Isn't it like 9 touchdowns off of kicks?
What is this on? This is ESPN.com, NFL. So this, I'm giving a source here. It is not giving me that, but good gracious, to have.
Yeah, I'm a whip it up here on Pro Football Reference here.
And I tell you what, I like this guy. I've always liked him, even though he played for UT Knoxville. I've always liked the guy. He is an amazing player. And you don't want to talk about a team. You say you're down by 2 touchdowns, and all of a sudden your kickoff guy breaks a couple ankles and goes 99 yards per touchdown. You may be down a touchdown, but there's your momentum back.
Yeah, he has 9 career kickoff returns for touchdowns. Just kickoffs. And he had his last one was in 2022 with Atlanta.
Well, that's before he started straight up running back too, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah, he was most of them as a wide receiver.
9 career touchdowns. You think, well, that's not a lot. That's a lot.
And I think that might be the NFL record, if I'm not mistaken. I thought I read that somewhere. I don't remember what Hester has, but we can look that up real quick too. See Devin Hester.
Oh. Josh Cribbs. I forgot about Josh Cribbs.
Yeah. Devin Hester has 5 touchdowns returned for kickoff in his career.
His big thing was punt returns. Devin Hester was big on the punt returns.
Yeah, he had 14 punt returns for touchdowns.
Yep, yeah, that's insane. Okay, all right. Look at this group here, Darren. I'm on, and you probably can see that Pro Football Reference, which is pretty, you quote them all the time. They're legit, okay? Cordarrelle Patterson, 9 touchdowns. That's a Josh Cribbs, Leon Washington, which I remember Leon Washington, mm-hmm. 8. Now listen to this next group here. Mel Gray, Dante Hall. That's who I was thinking of. Dante Hall.
Dante Hall. Yeah. Yeah.
The X Factor and Gale Sayers, 6.
Yeah. Nuts.
And Cordell Patterson is over that.
And Cordell Patterson has an advantage with this new rule. I think it's going to be, you're going to see more kick returns for touchdowns this season than I think you've ever seen any in the NFL.
Golly. Devin Hester had 5. Percy Harvin, I didn't realize he did kick return. He had 5 too. Have you ever noticed, and this, I've got just a few more minutes, bud, and I do appreciate you coming on tonight. Darren's show is the Pigskin Dispatch, but he also has the jersey. What's the name of the jersey?
The Sports Jersey Dispatch.
I follow both of them, but every now and then I sleep and forget things. And like I said numerous times about Darren, not only do I love the guy, he's a great dude, period. But his enthusiasm is infectious. To me, I'm a carrier, so if you're around me, you get infected with something. His enthusiasm carries over, so that's who you want to be around with.
Thank you. That's very kind. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm patient zero, and you're actually good at what you do, so just keep that in mind, you know, when we're talking here. No, I do appreciate you, Darren, about a lot what you do. Can you imagine, though, most kickoff returns, they get right in the middle because you don't want to kick toward the edge because you get a penalty, big penalty if it goes out of bounds. And most kickoffs look for the blocking. You can't do the V block anymore. You just can't.
No, no.
Which is good, I guess. But they look for the blocks, and what you find is that the special teams come straight at them, so they have to find corner routes. So most like the kickoff return I'm looking at now for the Music City Miracles on the left side.
We forgot the most important element of this new rule. Those guys, those either 19 or 18 guys are standing there, or 19 or 20 guys are standing there, they can't move until the ball hits the ground or is caught by receiver.
Oh, good gracious. So somebody like, if Devin Hester was still playing, he'd have 30 touchdowns in a year.
Right. Well, you know, let me take that back. I think the receiving team is allowed to move. The defensive guys, those 10 guys, other than the kicker, they're not allowed to move. They have to have a foot on the 40-yard line until the ball hits in the landing zone or is caught by a receiver.
So you remember when I said that these guys are smart, but the basic instincts will take over, and we're not talking Sharon Stone here, just the basic football instincts.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a lot of penalties on that.
Yeah, it probably will be. It's going to be interesting, though. And another big rule, if we got time, just a quick second, is the challenge rule. Now there's a third challenge if you've got one of those right.
Oh, so you don't have to have two anymore.
No, I think you get a third challenge before I believe that's how that rule is set up. Club's ability to challenge a third ruling following one successful challenge.
So all they have to do is have one.
Have one of their normal two right. They get a third one in that.
So
half.
That would encourage challenging.
Correct.
That would encourage challenging, yep. Which is, again, keeping the refs honest.
Yeah. You know what? My opinion is let them challenge as much as they want.
Don't we have that in the XFL?
The XFL had it. I think college football has something along those lines where everything's checked with the eye in the sky. But
it doesn't slow things down.
NFL's got to do it. Why have it? Because it's controversy every year. No matter, you could tell them 5 challenges and somebody's going to run out of them at the end of a game and feel they got cheated. Let them have as many as they want.
What was that play? We got about another minute, my friend, and I do appreciate you coming on. What was that play? It was the I believe it was the Saints versus the Vikings in the playoffs, where it was an obvious pass interference. And was it the Vikings? Yeah. It was the Saints.
Yeah, big time. But
by the way, Saints fans, your stadium is awesome. I was there this past October, Darren. Love it.
A lot better
area and a lot better fandom than a lot of places. A lot of times I've been to Titan Stadium. It's just, I think a lot has to do with the gumbo and the booze.
Oh yeah, that could
They had gumbo everywhere. It smelled awesome. It smelled awesome. But that play should have been reviewed.
Right.
Period. And yeah. It shouldn't have been a call from the coach, because I don't think they could have reviewed it at that time. It was like 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
No. Yeah, but yeah, they should have been able to do it, but they're allowing a few more things to be challenged too. There's a bunch of different stipulations which are just crazy. It'll probably happen once in a season, But the NFL's rulemakers just been sort of reactive to one or two plays happening in here. I mean, I had a whole thing up, but I know you're running out of time.
I've got to go, my friend. Let me get you back on.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you, Darren. You're awesome. Catch Darren at his podcast. We'll put a link in the notes. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
The Pigskin Tales podcast is all about the lesser known pro football players. Yes, there are stories about the ones we know, like Brad Tarkenton and Harold Red Grange. But have you ever heard of Ernie Nevers? How about Dave Osborne or even Grady Alderman? These men created their own path to the NFL. How did they do it? Listen to the Pigskin Tales podcast, now streaming on your favorite music platform. Go to pigskintales.com.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.